I've broken down for you three things that I think you should know about on this day. And here they are. Look what's happening in Europe. Brits want a new prime minister. Germans have a new popular party. Von der Leyen may be on her way out at the EU. And Macron, is he admitting defeat in Ukraine and blaming it on NATO? We got all of this. Zelensky is assuring the world that the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars sent to him to lose a war are still worth it because of what they have learned and can now share about modern warfare. Yeah, he actually said that. And then there's Netanyahu. He is blaming the United States for bombing Qatar, saying, you see, they did it first. All of these are going to get the Sanchez effect, so let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'm so glad that you're there. I want to begin today with Europe. They are having big problems, big problems. In the UK, the prime minister appears to be toast. Keir Starmer's apparent numbers when it comes to approval were already bad. They were like, what, in the 20s? We reported to you that. 23, to be exact. And that's before what just happened, before the humiliating ties were uncovered in his administration to child rapist Jeffrey Epstein. You see, the guy Starmer picked, handpicked as his top diplomat to the United States, he turned out to be an Epstein toady. And there's videos and there's pictures and there's love letters to prove that he was all in on Epstein and Epstein's, quote, attractive and interesting friends. Sick, right? Here's the question that's now being asked all over by the British press.
How likely is it that he will be ousted from his position? And if so, how soon do you think that would be?
Yeah, we took that from a news report airing in the last 24 hours. And by the way, look, when a question ends with, how soon do you think it will be before he's removed? When that's the questions being asked about you, man, you're in trouble. And he is. Then there's the French president, Emmanuel Macron. He's also in the 20s when it comes to approval rating. Polls show that his countrymen hate him for paying more attention to Ukraine than to their needs. And I wonder if maybe that's why he's now seeming to kind of agree with them. Yes, Professor Jeffrey Sachs has just come out with something Macron told him. He says Macron apparently admitted to him, Sachs, that NATO is actually to blame for the catastrophe in Ukraine.
Hey, Macron. By the way, Macron, I know him well. He told me the exact opposite of what he says in public. I don't like that. He gave me the French Legion of Honor and told me privately that NATO is the cause of this war.
So, yeah, we had to put that in English because it was originally in French. But imagine him saying something like that, Macron. Keep in mind, Macron, this is the same guy who has blamed Russia exclusively and even suggested sending Frenchmen to fight the Russians. So now he's saying, no, it's NATO's fault? You know, it begs the question, right? Was he lying then or is he lying now? His constituents, they may want to know. All right, what do you say we go to Germany? Might as well finish the whole trip around Europe, right? There, the people are undergoing insufferable economic conditions with arguably the worst GDP growth in the entire continent. 3-year recession. The government then has looked the other way as a pipeline to provide their people with cheap fuel was blown up. Yeah. And a government that seems hell-bent on sending their tax money, the people who live in Germany, to Ukraine as well. So, what changed? Enter the AfD. So, they call themselves the People's Party. That's the name of this new party that's getting a lot of strength there. Look at this. They're becoming increasingly popular and a real potential threat to the government of Friedrich Merz. They may be the change that a lot of people are looking for. In recent polls, the AfD has tripled its vote count. The party represents the will of the right in Germany, and what it says it wants is, well, cheap fuel, which they would have gotten, right, from Russia. And it's also saying they want their government to stop sending all of their tax money to Ukraine. All this while the German chancellor's approval numbers continue to tank. This is not exactly good news for men. Then there's the European Union, an institution that is reminding many people of a famous Hollywood movie. You might recall this movie. I watched it with my kids. They love it. It's called Dumb and Dumber. Dumb and Dumber. And that is how some are describing these two leaders in charge of the EU these days. First, there's a lady named Kaja Kallas. She is the EU's supposed top diplomat. So she's supposed to know about history and geopolitics, right? She recently said this, that she didn't know that Russia and China were actually involved in World War II. Ouch. And then there's her colleague, the actual head of the EU. Here is Ursula von der Leyen assuring the world that Europe is not fracturing.
I know that many of you feel let down by our oldest ally. Yes, we must brace for the impact that this will inevitably have. Europe has everything it needs to make it through the storm. We are in this together. If you take on one of us, you take on all of us. So we will stand together and stand up for each other. Our unity is our strength. Europe has the largest single market in the world, 450 million consumers. That is our safe harbor in tumultuous times.
You know, I always wondered why people like her have to actually read every word that's written for them out of a script, but maybe that's just me. You'd think she'd know that stuff. By the way, von der Leyen is now facing not one, but two confidence votes coming up in the next 30 days. That's going to happen in October. As for these arguments that you just heard her make, right, two things. No, she's wrong. Europe is not unified right now. Even just saying it doesn't make it happen. You know what I mean? In fact, many countries like Slovakia and Hungary and others are opposed to her policies and have said so flat out. As for those 450 million consumers that she brags about, polls show overwhelmingly they don't agree with her. They don't agree with the EU's policies. They say their governments are taking them generally for granted. You know, one of the things, and it's a recurring topic that a lot of Europeans are most riled up about these days, is the hundreds of billions of dollars that could be used to improve their lives, their wages, their inflation levels, their high taxes, but they don't get that money. They don't get the benefit of it for themselves or for their kids. Why? Because it's being sent to Ukraine, and people in Europe are just fed up with that. Don't worry, says Volodymyr Zelensky, the man who is receiving that money.
From the very beginning of this war, we moved different of our soldiers to train in Baltic countries, Nordic, UK. Next year, we understood that we can't train our people there because the war changed. And we are now inviting, oppositely, we are inviting officers and representatives from other countries to learn here. So I think that we are in the best shape technologically what can be for today. Russians learn from us.
Yeah, talk about putting lipstick on a pig, right? So think about what this guy's saying, right? Zelensky's saying that only Russia and Ukraine's military know how to fight modern technological war, right? Particularly using state-of-the-art drones. But here's the problem. Ukraine is losing that war. So what he's saying is that the almost $1 trillion that was spent by Europeans was spent so they can now learn how in the future to lose a war. Right? Now, call me crazy, but it seems to me that if anybody wants to learn modern warfare technology, maybe they should be talking to the winners of this war, not the losers, right? Maybe it's time to pick up the phone and call Russia. Here's another leader in the news today. And this guy, unlike some of those guys and gals, is no dummy. No dummy. He knows exactly what he's doing every time and could likely have most of these European brainiacs for lunch and still have room for dessert. Yeah, I'm talking about this guy, Israel's Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, who's in the midst of an admitted ethnic cleansing of Palestinians and is doing so in a way that is being described as a genocide by several global organizations, including the World Court and the UN. And now he's saying he has the right to do what he did when he bombed Qatar, even though it was some other country, and he didn't tell them it was going to happen, because, well, the U.S., the United States, has set the precedent for doing such things. Yes, he's literally throwing the United States right under the bus and then running over them again. Genius.
The United States bombed Afghanistan because that's where al-Qaeda was. And then they bombed Pakistan because that's where bin Laden was. Now, nobody said, my God, a terrible thing happened. America violated the sovereignty of Afghanistan, or America violated the sovereignty of Pakistan. Don't harbor terrorists. Nobody will have to act on your territory. But it's our right, our internationally recognized right of states to act against terrorists who operate, who attack them from other states.
He's amazing. He's just amazing. Two things. First of all, according to General Wesley Clark and Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who has written extensively on this subject, it was him, Mr. Netanyahu, and others in the Israeli government who actually orchestrated the U.S.'s invasion of both Afghanistan and Iraq and were very much involved as well in the killing of Osama bin Laden, as they are involved, the Mossad, that is, in just about everything that happens in the world. So he's actually complaining about something the U.S. did that he told them to do. But as for the rest of these events, Netanyahu is speaking from a very Western point of view, where the reaction is purposely muffled and controlled. The question of assassinating people on other people's soil is generally not well received anywhere, nor was it when it happened. For the record, by the way. All right, so I got a guest for you. Pearson Sharp, he's an investigative journalist. He works at One America News, and he's good enough to join us now to talk about all of these things that are taking place all over the world. And by golly, he's an American, just like me. So, and he's done a lot of the things that I've done in my life, which is work at television news and in journalism. And he finds himself now in the interesting position of trying to say the stories that at most networks in the United States, you would be out the door in 5 minutes. But yet, I got to tell you something. I've been watching this guy's reports, and he's not like the other guys on CNN or even Fox or any of those other networks in the United States. I introduce you to Pearson Sharp. Pearson, thank you so much for joining us, man. Good to see you.
Thanks. Thank you for having me, Rick. Appreciate it.
You know, it's fascinating that you are able to do and share some of the stories that you share with the American viewers, because unfortunately, oftentimes the American viewers only get one side of the story, and it's usually kind of written by folks at the State Department and the Pentagon.
The wrong side.
Yeah, right. Can you talk a little bit about that, the pressure, and how you've been able to avoid it and keep doing what you're doing?
I will tell you the way that we've been able to avoid it and the way that I can do what I do is because of One America News, 100%. We are absolutely unique in my experience. OAN is family-owned and operated. We own ourselves. We're not beholden to anyone. And so we can report the news that everybody else is afraid to touch.
The things that you are reporting, I have a friend in the United States. I've talked about him. You probably know him. His name is Tucker Carlson. He and I had a lot of conversations, and one we had on the air where we laughed because I said, I said, you know, I got fired by CNN when I started doing this kind of reporting, and you got fired over at Fox when you started doing some of this reporting. One of the things that he was joking about is he always used to have McGregor on, and he'd have Colonel Doug McGregor on, and McGregor would say, it's not true that Ukraine is winning the war and that they're just a bunch of good guys and Russia's the bad guys. And he said, ever since I got fired, Rick, they haven't had McGregor back on. So, I mean, that kind of tells you what's going on there, doesn't it?
100%. I mean, that's the narrative, you know, everybody knows. Ukraine is winning, Russia is losing, and you know, I stand here in Russia and look at all the losing that's happening. I see very sad people everywhere. I mean, it's just a joke. It's absolutely a joke. The mood here is, you know, everybody's walking around, it's normal life, everyone feels good, no one's afraid. They're just, the narrative of Russia, of Ukraine winning is a joke. I mean, that's what it is.
Well, you know, and in many ways, I understand that you just did some investigative work by going to Donbass and talking to people. It's something very few reporters do anymore. It's one of the reasons I'm here, because access is important.
Right.
If you want to know what's going on in the world, go to different parts of the world and ask people questions. But we don't do that, unfortunately.
Talk to the people there.
Exactly. Yep. You just had an opportunity to do that in Donbass. That's an easy, it's an interesting part of the world where mostly they are Russian people. But they have no problems with the Ukrainian people because they've been like cousins or brothers and sisters for so long. But more recently...
Yeah, forever.
More recently, they've kind of come under attack by the Ukrainian side, and the Russians have now said, okay, you know what, we're taking it back. What, when you talk to those people, do they feel put upon by Putin and the big bad Russians, or do they feel like, hey, we'd be happy to be a part of Russia again? Which is it?
Oh, they feel so terrorized by Russia that when they had a chance to vote on it, 99% of them voted to join Russia. So, you know, that says everything. But these people, Russians, Ukrainians, I mean, common history, common blood, common language, common culture, common religion. One of the people here asked me, he said, from an outsider's perspective, if you were, you know, you've been to Ukraine, you've been here in Russia in Donbass, how similar, how different is it? And I said, if you put me in Kiev, if you put me in Donbass and didn't tell me where I was, it's the same place. It's the same people. And when I was in Ukraine a couple years ago, I asked the people there, how do you feel about Russia being in Donbass, Russia taking Crimea, that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And they said, flat out, all of the people I asked said, those areas are Russian. The people who live there are Russian. If they want to be part of Russia, let them. And so when I was there, every single person I talked to in Donbass this past week, every single person without exception said, we're Russian.
Yeah.
That's our history. That's our culture. We want to be a part of Russia. We don't feel like Putin is threatening us. We say, thank God that President Putin came here and saved us, because the Ukrainian regime, Zelensky, was terrorizing us. And so all of them feel absolutely liberated by the fact that Russia has come in there and taken the territory back.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, you're a trustworthy person. And if it was a different situation, you wouldn't be lying about this. You would have no reason to. Why would you do that? I mean, you'd never work again if you came and just flat out lied about something. So you're sharing with me, a fellow American, your observations. And yet, if you try and share that observation with other fellow Americans, they're going to call you a Putin apologist. I mean, it's got to bother you, right?
Well, 100%. Yeah, I am waiting for my return to the United States and to see the articles being published that I was paid by Putin, or that, you know, this was a Russian propaganda trip, or that I'm sponsored by the Kremlin, or all these things. Same thing happened when I went to Syria.
Yeah.
And I happened to talk to RT when I was in Syria. And I mentioned the Russian investigative team that came in and looked at the chemical attacks in Douma. All the articles that came out after that said, oh, I was paid by Russia, da-da-da-da-da. It's the same story over and over again, because they have to push the narrative. And anyone who contradicts that, well, they've got to explain it. And the most convenient way to explain that is, oh, he's Russian. It's the boogeyman again.
Would it surprise you if I told you that this show that you're on right now, I wrote it, I put it together, I told my editors and my writers what we were going to be working on, I picked my
topics?
Surely
not. Surely not. No, you have Putin over your shoulder.
Because, you know, it's weird, though, dude. I couldn't do this at CNN. No, hell no. They picked my guest. And they carefully went over my scripts about a team of 8, 9 people who were like the elders. They called them the row. And they would go through and you can't say this, you can't say this. So who's more free when it comes to free speech? I don't know, man. I'm confused too, right?
Well, I mean, CNN, they carefully work with the Pentagon and the other people. There's a narrative, and it's constructed and it's maintained top to bottom. So that makes perfect sense.
Does it bother you a little bit, as it does me, that some of the folks that I was all excited about, I was all in with this Trump administration. I thought these guys are going to be great because they're going to be more transparent and they're going to take on, you know, the interventionists, as Mr. Trump said he would. And some of the neocons and stuff. I'm kind of getting a feeling that that system is too tough to buck. That administrative state is there to stay, and Trump may be no different than some of his predecessors. What about you?
Well, I think Trump is absolutely different, and I think he is trying his hardest to buck the system, but the system is well-established. The roots are deep, and...
Yeah.
You prune one and another one grows. I mean, we've seen all the times he's tried to appoint this person or that person, the judges slap him down. Everything he does, his hands are tied on this, that, and the other. And I think, you know, unless you yourself are president, the person who's leading the country is not going to do things exactly the way you want them to be done. So Trump's not always going to do exactly what we think should be done. And he's going to make mistakes. But I think by and large, the direction he's trying to take the country is the right one. And maybe people say, well, he shouldn't be sanctioning Russia. That's not right. You know, he has no business doing that. My impression is that he is a businessman. He has decades of experience doing this. And he looks at negotiations with countries the same as negotiations with other businesses, with companies, with businessmen. And I think he's trying to approach it from that perspective. And I think he sees sanctions as a way to avoid open warfare. And maybe it's not the right way, but at least a sanction isn't killing people the way flying, you know, the way Biden would flying bombs in or something like that.
Right.
I think Trump is trying to pull back. And it's a delicate dance. You can't just cut everything off at once. Everybody has to maintain face, you know. Putin has to look good. Trump has to look good. Who cares about Zelensky? But you have to do it the right way, and I think it's a delicate dance, and I think he's doing the best he can under the circumstances.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think, you know, we forget because we live in the moment, especially us Americans. We have this 24-hour news mindset. We forget just how horrible things were under the Biden administration, where, you know, God bless him, as they say in the South, where my wife is from, bless his heart. The guy didn't know what he was doing because he was kind of incapacitated mentally at the time. And as a result, everybody else was running the show, and there wasn't a single war we didn't want to jump in on. So it seemed to me the world was more dangerous under Biden than it is under Trump, even if I'm not yet convinced
Absolutely. That Trump is
doing a lot of the right things. You agree?
Yeah, I would completely agree. Yeah. That's been the status quo in America for decades now, half a century or more. If we can get into a war, let's get into it. And I think Trump appears to have demonstrated that he wants to stay out of wars if he can.
Yeah.
And I do think he's trying his hardest to clean the situation up. And man, what a situation. The billions we've sent over there for nothing, absolutely wasted. The lives we've destroyed. I was walking the streets of Donbass and...
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking what has happened over there. And you have people like Victoria Nuland.
Yeah.
And Obama, and they come in and they make these decisions. They think they know better. They're smart. They have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
They have an agenda. And they make a decision, just a casual comment. Let's overthrow this person. He needs to go. That's the sentence that's spoken, and that's the end of it. And the repercussions from that, the lives that are destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's rough.
And
by the way, you know,
it's gut-wrenching.
You're right. And in many ways, we look at this and a lot of people forget because we talk about, you know, that there have been a lot of civilians who've died in this war. Yeah, there are civilians who've died in this war, but we forget a lot of those civilians died because the Ukrainians attacked them. A lot of those were in Donetsk and Lugansk and in some of those areas where they were Russians being attacked by missiles that were coming in from Ukraine. So if you have a total of 11,000 to 13,000 people so far who are civilians who've died in this war, which, by the way, that number, one, is too many, but that number is minuscule compared to Iraq, Afghanistan, what's going on right now in Gaza, for example.
Yeah.
That's a part of the story, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people who send the missiles over here don't have to look at the faces of the families who've lost their children. And I'm not going to talk about it because I'll lose it on camera. But we went to the Alley of Angels in Donetsk, which is a memorial. For the children who died. And it's rough, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's a story. And you know what? I'm grateful to you as a fellow journalist that you're sharing that story, because it's important for the world to know both sides of the story and not just one. And too many people in the West are prevented from learning the other side of the story, which as you're saying, in many ways, is probably a more important part of the story. Because this war, look, dude, as you just mentioned with the story about Victoria Nuland, this war did not start because one side started it. It's much more complicated. And it kind of goes back to a time when Russia decided to embrace the United States of America and the West and said, we want to be like you. Yeah. We want to be a part of you.
And absolutely.
We crapped all over them. We said no.
We kicked them in the face. Yeah, we did. There's Russians here I've talked to. And one of them on our trip down there, I won't mention names, but, you know, he grew up in the Soviet Union. And he said, you know, I grew up in the 80s watching movies in America, and we wanted to be like you guys. You know, the clothes, the music, the food, the movies, everything. We wanted to be like you.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, you guys just, you kicked us in the face. Like, that was it. And they haven't looked back since. And, you know, there's that willingness, that desire. And I think a lot of the world has that, even China.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be like America. Everybody does. The culture is so imitatable. It's infectious, and that was our greatest strength. And you know, now with the DEI initiatives, the woke stuff, we're just throwing that in the trash. We lost that edge, and our foreign policy and everything else. It's just so tragic to have had that influence for the good of the world and to have lost it. These countries want to be our friend, and instead we attack them.
Yeah.
Why? So much is lost. It's senseless, Rick. It's absolutely senseless.
And you're in Moscow. It's so cool. You go in the stores, they're playing American music. You're singing along and snapping your finger to you know, whatever, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons or something in the malls. And all the stores.
Well, we were walking outside Red Square yesterday, and there was a guy playing a guitar, and he was singing Hallelujah.
Yeah.
You know, just this beautiful song. He's sitting there playing, and it's like, you know, this could be America. We could be friends. We could absolutely be friends.
I know.
Everybody here wants to. So why are we fighting?
It's
There's
so
no
true.
Boogeyman here.
There's
none.
Because people are making money off the aggression, man. People are making money off the potential war, so they get to make more bombs and things that kill. You know what's interesting?
And kids.
And I'm gonna ask you about this because you're there now. You're sitting in the middle of Moscow right now, a big, giant city. Just like Los Angeles, just like New York, just like Chicago, just like Philadelphia, just like Miami, where I'm from. And I bet, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, I bet you feel perfectly safe.
Oh, I'm very threatened by all the homeless who aren't here and all the dangerous-looking people walking around, the families and stuff, the kids playing in the parks. I feel very threatened.
Yeah.
But I do have to point out, I'm actually in Nizhny Novgorod right now.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday I was in Moscow. I'm going back in a couple of days. But yeah, it's the same feeling here. Everybody's just walking around friendly. I wish I could describe this and share with this to people who live in America who are so afraid of Russia, the big bad Russia, because it's such a free, peaceful place.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not off camera taking money from Putin right now. Like, it's just, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, no.
And the history, Rick.
No.
Oh, my God. I mean, you understand.
Yeah.
It's just everything here. It's
no drug addiction, at least that you can see. There's drug addiction, obviously, everywhere in the world.
I was astonished.
But you don't see it.
I was in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and you know, the people I talked to said that it had been cleaned up a lot, and I believe them, but there were still homeless in the parks. There were still areas of the city that looked a little shady and stuff like that. And here in Moscow, it's the complete opposite. There's no homeless. I swear, I did not see a single homeless person anywhere. Nothing looked shady. Nothing felt uncomfortable. It was just families and people walking. Normal life. You couldn't feel safer.
When my wife Suzanne said the same thing when she was visiting me here recently, and she's coming back in a couple of weeks again, and she was talking about that because it was like I think midnight, and we were walking back to our place, and she said, "Honey, are we okay?" And I said, "Yeah, it's fine, and it's just people in parks with children and playing, and they tend to stay up late." And one of the things that strikes me about this place is they have like Brezhnev and Khrushchev and those guys who they respect their history here in Russia. Everything from Peter the Great to Catherine the Great. I mean, they're all there, Pushkin, everybody. But the politicians, they kind of keep them to the side. The people they elevate, and there's, you know, musicians everywhere you go and statues everywhere you go. The statues are to the playwrights, the thinkers, the religious people, the warriors, the fighters. Yeah. They're not just, you know, politicians. Yeah. It's almost like, I kind of like that. Yeah, I kind of like that, you know? It's different in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, there is something to say about putting up a statue of George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. I think that's absolutely appropriate.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get what you're saying. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Walking through Moscow, there's a statue of Peter the Great, you know, standing on the ship. It's just awe-inspiring.
Yeah, what a history, right? What a history. Let's talk a little bit about the news. I'm concerned about a lot of things and a lot of things in the news these days. The whole Charlie Kirk assassination, which is what it was, seems to have our country on edge. Again, people, you know, making assertions without really knowing what's going on. And there's a story that broke yesterday that bothered me a little bit. And it's about the fact that the Israelis are very angry at Charlie Kirk toward the end because he started wavering in terms of his support for them. Just in general, tell me what your thoughts are on the whole Charlie Kirk situation and how you think Americans are dealing with it.
I mean, there's so many elements to this, and it's still quite a recent story. I've heard conspiracies here and there. I don't want to, you know, get too into that.
Right, of course.
But I think it's revealing of a deep schism in America today that I don't know how we can heal, because you have an absolutely fanatical, radical element in our society that is only being encouraged to grow more fanatical. Mm-hmm. And you can't reason with them. I mean, if anybody in the history of our country has tried to reason with people and give them a chance to discuss their ideas, it was Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
You know, every chance he got, he was out there talking to people, trying to reach across the table and have the exchange of ideas.
That's true.
That's all he was doing. And so the fact that they killed him for that shows you they have no interest in bridging that divide, in trying to understand the other side. To them, the other side is lethal. It's a fatal threat that must be eliminated at all costs. And so I'm afraid how much further this is going to spread. It's always these fanatical elements that carry out these kinds of attacks. So, Rick, I don't know. I don't know how we fix the situation, but it is...
Yeah.
It's frightening to think, you know, I have two little girls, and it's frightening to think about where this country is headed if this is becoming the norm.
I worry about the fact that I don't think our country that we love for its people, for its constitution, for its history, for all of those things, I don't think our leaders give a damn these days about the people of America and what they actually want and need and what are the things that they should foster that are important for them, like family, like religion, and like whatever it is they want to believe in to improve their lot, their lives, their health care, their ability to find a home to live in or pay rent. I think these things are like being buried. I think that may be part of the underlying problem in America. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. They have, I mean, power and control. It's everything comes down to that. And they have the agenda that they're trying to spread. And they say the things they think can get them votes. And they don't care what happens when they speak these words of hatred and start indoctrinating people. I mean, there's the meme of the guy watching TV, and it says, these people are evil on the TV. And then he's listening to the music, and it says, these people are evil. And he's reading the newspaper article. It says, these people are evil. And then the next one is he's out there with a sign saying, these people are evil. It's like, well, what do you think is going to happen? It's indoctrination at every level of society. And it's unless you are laser focused on critical thinking and dissecting these kinds of attacks on our mental state, you're going to fall into that trap, too. So you have to really arm your kids with this critical knowledge and how to dissect these kinds of attacks. Otherwise, it's subliminal. And, you know, hopefully we see a collapse, an absolute collapse of the university system in America, because that's where a lot of this crap comes from. It's got to stop.
You know, it's something I was thinking about the other day, and I was doing some interviews with lots of folks in India in particular who are interested in this. I'm starting to think that we need to pick a better team. You know, if you and I were putting together a basketball team right now, I'd try and get the big, tall guys, muscular and strong, and, you know, I'd avoid the short, stubby guy who can't shoot. Which could be me, by the way.
Well, I'm 5'8", so I don't know, Rick. Would I make the team?
But I'm almost thinking if I could be
I can jump a little.
If I could say something to Mr. Trump is, you know what? It's time to let some of these losers go. I see this adoration we have for these countries like the UK and Germany and France. These guys, they're in big trouble, and yet they're our allies. Meanwhile, I'm watching India with a 6.8 GDP growth, and China and Malaysia and Vietnam and Russia. And I'm thinking, maybe we need to start picking better friends. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at what point in the last few years could you say the UK was our ally?
Yeah.
I mean, what have they done to help us? Everything they do furthers the agenda of destroying the West. So why would we pick them? I mean, if we were going to pick somebody who's upholding Western values, who's standing for personal freedoms, maybe Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an idea. They seem to be the only country in the West that's upholding Western values at this point. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's funny, you're right. You walk around and you almost feel sometimes, you pinch yourself because you think, and I've thought this and I feel bad saying it, but damn it, Pearson, I'm going to say it. There are a lot of things that I find in Moscow in particular that remind me of what me and my friends in America want our country to be. You know?
Right.
It sucks to say it.
Yeah, but there's a sense when you talk to the people here of traditional values, of family values, of having a deep-rooted faith, of being, you know, deeply Christian and having a real attachment to that history. And that's what made the West great, having those values. And if we don't have that, what do we have in America? And I think that is the question that so many people are asking and frankly, floundering with, because the left, the radical elements, and a lot of the Republicans who just, you know, they get there for the votes. They don't care.
Right.
Have pulled that foundation out from under us. And now we're free falling into chaos, absolute chaos.
Yeah, that's the thing. I agree with you. That's the thing that bothers me is the hatred, the schism that's developed. You don't see that here. People argue. You go to a bar and people, they like Putin. The other guy doesn't like Putin, likes what he did in Ukraine, doesn't like what he did in Ukraine, thinks the taxes are too high, thinks the wages are too low, like every other place. But what you don't get is the hate. It's not like these people are over here and these people are over here and they're about to come at each other, like what we saw with the Charlie Kirk incident, where we almost see a level of almost, it's not civil war. I hate when people say that because we're not there, but you know, it feels uncivil at the very least.
That's something that the group and I noticed when we were touring through Donbass is this area that has been just ravaged by war. They've lost so much.
Yeah.
And if anybody in the world has lost a lot, you can say Donbass has. And yet, despite all the attacks that they've suffered through, all the people we talked to, we didn't feel any hate. We didn't feel any hate. And we went to this, we're walking down the street and we came to this house and the whole street, the buildings, the walls were riddled with bullets. The windows were smashed out, apartments were collapsed from shelling. And we came to one apartment building. Half the building was collapsed. It was, you know, hit with a bomb.
Yeah.
The other half, some of the floors were still there. Some of them were bombed out. But there was a man still living in this apartment. And he looked out the window and he agreed to come down and talk to us. And he was this old man. And even this person who has suffered all of this, I asked him if he had a message for America and what he'd want our leaders to know. And he said, we just want peace. He said, we don't hate you. We're not your enemy. Please stop bombing us.
Wow.
I mean, that's as simple as it gets. That's as simple as it gets. He wasn't angry. He wasn't, you know, oh, you're American. Oh, I hate you. You know, it was just, we want to be your friend. Please stop sending bombs. That seems, call me crazy, but that seems like a very reasonable request.
I agree. And I'm glad you're courageous enough to share that request and do the type of coverage that you're doing, Pearson. It really is noteworthy. And I wish more people would do what you're doing and reach out just to tell the stories, not propaganda, not somebody else's.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
Rick, it's not hard. You just have to come here. You just have to come here. Yeah. That's it.
Open your eyes and then tell the stories. Wow. Pearson Sharp, what a wonderful experience it has been having this conversation with you. I look forward to having more conversations with you. And what your network is doing at One America is fantastic. And if they're able to break that mold of being able to tell the stories that usually our government doesn't let you tell, thank God. I'm with you 100%. And let me know how I can help, because I'm in. It's fantastic.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
God bless you, man.
Absolutely.
Take care. Likewise.
I could not do this without OAN. Thank you.
Good for them. We're with them, too, then. Thank you again, Pearson. All right, so listen, we're out of time. That's it for us. What a great conversation with a good guy, huh? My podcast, where I'll be sharing some of my conversation with him, will be Journalistically Speaking. You've probably seen it. If not, please check it out. Journalistically Speaking, it's on YouTube, it's on Spotify, it's on Apple, it's all over the place. And tens of thousands of you are subscribing and checking it out, and I thank you for that. I also want to thank you for the conversations we have with hundreds of thousands of you every night on X lately. It's really gotten cool. It's so vibrant. Everybody talks, everybody shares. Thanks again. That's Rick Sanchez TV. That's where I have that conversation right after I'm done here. Thanks for being with us. Thank you for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Sanchez Effect, and we'll be looking for you next time.